It's the morning show on KAXE, KBXE. We continue to keep you updated on COVID-19 and the pandemic, whether it's with state officials, like tomorrow's conversation with Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, that's at 11:30, or conversations with local healthcare providers. Yesterday, we heard from Sanford Health in Bemidji. I'm Heidi Holton, and joining me today via Zoom from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital are Dr. Dan Soular. He's Vice President of Medical Affairs and Family Medicine Physician, and Dr. Simon Lick. He's a hospitalist. Thanks for being with us today and for wearing your masks. Good to see you on Zoom.
Good morning. Good to be with you. Good morning.
Well, let's get kind of an overview. And Simon, let's start with you. Where do things stand when it comes to COVID-19 in Grand Itasca right now?
So, you know, hospital beds have been in relatively short supply statewide. That's certainly no big news to anybody. You know, hospital admissions have really been peaking over the last 3 weeks. We have not yet seen a slowdown. I would say that here at Grand Itasca, we have been upstaffing in our medical surgical units to try and at least temporarily go sort of above and beyond where we would typically be. An average census, we can reliably staff about 20 medical surgical beds. We've been trying to flex up to 25. We've just been having struggles, as everybody has, with staffing that many beds, especially with nurses. That really does seem to be the pinch point. Nurses and ancillary staff, and that being, you know, respiratory therapists, physical and occupational therapists, et cetera. From an intensive care unit standpoint, we have been trying to at least remain consistent with where we've been at 4 beds, and we've been successful with that. I think, you know, everybody has been trying to really optimize their critical care capacity. What we've seen region-wide is having the Duluth hospitals being very tight on beds. And that's been pretty consistent for the last 3 weeks. And that really, you know, does become the referral hub for a great portion of the Iron Range. So when, you know, St. Luke's and Essentia, St. Mary's are at capacity, then we all have to get really creative with, you know, if we're all full and they're full, then what? So it's an ongoing balancing act, and the special sauce has been hard to find, but we're keeping our foot on the gas with trying to keep people staffed and engaged.
Yeah. You've got a plan for that, but how do you do that if they're at capacity at the places you might refer people to? What then?
Yeah, so a couple of things. So from a critical care standpoint, one resource that's been really vital, I would say, is something called the C4. So if you have a patient who's requiring critical care management and they're in the ER and there is no bed available at that current facility or in your sort of immediate surrounding vicinity, then there's a central number that we can call that's managed through the state that will find critical care beds anywhere. And then we'll fly them to wherever. That could be Sandstone or Winona, whatever that looks like. So that has been one really unique thing. I don't know if that's unique to our state, but it has certainly been a resource that we have utilized, and it has been highly utilized statewide. And then from a medical surgical staffing standpoint, hospital capacities continue to change. So, for example, when a hospital is completely full, we call that on a diversion status, and that's public information on a website that all hospitals are obliged to share. So we know which hospitals are completely at capacity or not, and that will change depending on if, for example, nurses can be found or if they can come off of a quarantine. And I will just say that to every nurse out there, they have just been so exceptional in stepping up to this. I mean, we have people coming in and working shifts from, you know, 7 at night until 7 a.m. and then staying until 11 a.m. just to fill in, or coming in at 3 in the morning and then working the entire day after that. and we're able to sort of put these puzzle pieces together to just to try and keep people, number one, as close to home as we can, and then number two, you know, absolutely continue to try and prevent things that you're hearing about and reading about, like rationing of care, etc. And so far so good. We just really need this to slow down.
Yeah. So if someone listening to us doesn't, you have an answer for if you were at capacity, you know what to do next. They shouldn't worry about that if they live in Itasca County, that Grand Itasca will have a solution for how they can get care.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. And all hospitals have contingency planning. And at the end of the day, you know, the state has been really exceptional about trying to help especially smaller non-regional centers with some of that coordination. Because if everybody's trying to invent the wheel on surge planning and how to execute that, it just gets to be really, really complicated. So from our standpoint, Fairview has been really integral with that. And Sanford would be the same, essentially be the same. I mean, these are large health care organizations that are able to rely on, you know, a bigger base of resource to keep people safe, plain and simple.
Well, let's talk a little bit about testing. Dan, I wonder if you could tell us about capacity at Grand Itasca, both in terms of the public, and then are your healthcare professionals able to be getting tested as much as they need to be?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And that is one area that has really improved, I would say, since this pandemic started in March. You know, early on, it was very limited who could get tested. You know, as we sit today, essentially, if you have any symptoms that are consistent with COVID-19, you can come in and get curbside tested without seeing a provider. We've tried to make it very simple and quite frankly, keep those ill people out of our clinic so that we're able to keep our nurses and providers healthy and returning to work. From an employee standpoint, you know, anytime we've been exposed to somebody with COVID or we have COVID symptoms, we are encouraging our employees to get tested. Good news is our tests all get processed through the University of Minnesota. And turnaround times have been exceptional. For employees, it's generally within about 24 hours you get your result back. For the general public, it's within 3 days, and oftentimes it will be sooner, but it can bump up to 3 days. And that's been consistent through the 10 months of this pandemic. You know, other facilities, other testing sites that can take a little bit longer, anywhere from 5 to 7 days. But so far, we've been able to keep it right at that about 72-hour turnaround time.
And so it sounds like you need to have symptoms to do the drive up at Grand Itasca to get tested, or having been exposed as well. But the state has been, you know, there's saliva testing in Duluth now. You can do the at-home saliva testing through the Department of Health website. So it sounds like if you're concerned about it and even don't have symptoms, there's a way to find a test. Is that right?
Correct. There's many ways to find a test. You know, locally, the Armory in Hibbing, you can go and get tested, no questions asked. I believe it's free of charge. You mentioned in Duluth, there's the saliva testing, and those sites continue to pop up throughout the state as more of those supplies come on board. And you can go online and request a test be sent to your home. I know of several people that have gone through that process. They'll have a Zoom meeting similar to this with a healthcare provider to make sure they're collecting the test appropriately, and then those get sent down to the metro for processing. So, you know, testing really has, I would say, loosened up, especially compared to where we were just a few months ago.
It's Dr. Dan Sular, and we're also talking with Dr. Simon Lick. They are from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital. Well, let's talk about the hospitalizations. Simon, what kind of symptoms from COVID are you seeing in the hospital, and how are you caring for people with COVID?
When people come to the ER, you know, they're coming there because they feel really poorly and, you know, very typical to have very high fevers, very frequently having, you know, respiratory complaints of one reason or another, you know, loss of taste and smell, et cetera. I think the big thing, you know, that we're all seeing is that treatment options have improved, especially in comparison to March when this was really new and we were hearing a lot of conflicting messaging on potential treatment options. The things that have really shaken out are three, and that is, number one, if you are hospitalized, there's mortality benefit in steroids We were talking about Decadron, not to, you know, build muscles and hit more home runs, but mostly to essentially decrease your inflammatory state in your body. And what seems to be tamping down some of these inflammatory effects that are causing such significant, you know, sickness and morbidity in the folks that you hear about. Number two is an antiviral medication called remdesivir. You know, remdesivir previously got a emergency use from the FDA for Ebola and has shown some morbidity improvement in people. So that is a 5-day course that's IV only, and that is indicated for hospitalized patients. And then the third thing is we're giving everybody a subcutaneous injection of a blood thinner while they're hospitalized called Lovenox if they have appropriate kidney function. It just seems that COVID is very apt to creating blood clots, and so we're very aggressive about trying to prevent that. So Decadron with remdesivir and Lovenox, and then managing any of the other comorbidities that people may or may not have has basically been the secret sauce at this point. Other things that you'll hear about, you know, convalescent plasma and all kinds of other chemotherapeutics and even things like famotidine or good old Pepcid, those are all being used, but at this point only in the setting of clinical trials. That is not being dispensed or utilized from a clinical care standpoint.
You know, throughout this conversation already, you both have said how things have changed since March. We know a lot more. How people get COVID has changed as well. Dan, I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit. The people, the patients that you're seeing, do they know where they're getting it from? What are you hearing?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, early on, the contact tracing was a lot easier because you knew of one person that had symptoms and you were likely with that person. Now, because it's so widespread in our community, contact tracing is very difficult. It's hard to say who specifically you got it from or what scenario. You know, was it at deer camp? Was it at Thanksgiving? Was it at work? Was it at a local store or a restaurant? Finding out specifically where you got it from has become much more challenging just because of the sheer numbers that are in the community right now.
If someone has emergency needs that are not COVID related, is Grand Itasca ready to handle that still, or things where you need ongoing treatment or even just checkups?
Yeah, I would say right now, actually, it seems counterintuitive, but it's probably more important now than ever to actually deal with those medical issues when they're slightly simmering as opposed to waiting until the wheels fall off. Because quite frankly, as Simon said, there are times where we literally don't have beds in the hospital for our sick patients. And so if we can address those medical issues at an early stage and hopefully address them and get people feeling better so they don't require coming to the emergency room, or, you know, in the hospital, that's gonna be our best case scenario. So we are safe, you know, everybody's masked up, everybody that comes to work has no symptoms, or nobody at home has been exposed to COVID, because if they are, they would not be coming to work. You know, we're open for business, and we've been doing this for months now. And like I said, a lot of people feel like it's probably the safest thing to stay away from hospitals, but we're trying to let people know this is the time where we really need to keep people as healthy as possible to avoid those hospitalizations.
Simon, you mentioned your coworkers. Now, you guys are both doctors. You're very important, but there's a lot of other people there, and we've heard about shortages. How's the morale of staff? How are you handling things right now?
It's been a marathon for a lot of people in a lot of different roles. I mean, you have, you know, the administrative folks who have essentially recreated healthcare operations in the matter of months. You have providers who have stepped up and really stepped out of their comfort zone to provide, you know, frankly, really exceptional care in a lot of really difficult situations. And then nurses and ancillary support with the physical and occupational therapy, the nurses' aides, the teletechs. I mean, everybody plays such a critical role. I mean, you know, healthcare has become such a team-based approach that it doesn't work without everybody keeping their head in it and staying positive. And I think, you know, we got a big job to do, and we just got to take it a day at a time. And this too shall pass.
I could add to that, just my role as leadership, I think now is more the most important time we've had. And the reason why I say that is I was speaking to a colleague of mine that works in the Metro. And, you know, in March and April, when this first really started hitting the press and really picking up steam nationwide, you know, the outpouring support was phenomenal. I mean, it was, you know, it would bring tears to your eyes. You know, people were dropping off meals. We had planes flying over, New York City, you had people standing outside the hospital cheering for you. And that was great and well-deserved. And at that point in time in Itasca County, you know, we were pretty quiet up here. And, you know, now that we're going through our surge, you know, that support and passion has certainly plateaued. And now, you know, there's the added struggle of divisiveness and the political side of the whole taking care of COVID and the whole deal. And so, you know, I think locally we've really tried to step up and try to maintain that support for our staff. We really appreciated that March and April support, but boy, we're really here to support you now because it's hitting us now. And, that's one thing I want to make sure our staff, you know, feels that support day to day.
Yeah. So it sounds like, because my next question has kind of been answered, but the community needs to support the healthcare workers right now. We also need to keep ourselves healthy, regular, in our regular self, so that, you know, if we do contract COVID, we're at a healthier state. But what else specifically would you ask of the community right now?
Yeah, I think just resisting that urge to have COVID fatigue. I mean, we all have it. You're speaking to two of us that if anybody's tired of COVID, we'll raise our hand first. But, you know, simple things, raising the mask. I mean, that is not political. That is science. There's a reason why we've worn masks in surgery for centuries. You know, it works, period. And whether you believe it or not, you're going to keep our coworkers, our nursing, our support staff healthy so they can come to the hospital and take care of you during your heart attack or your stroke or your car accident or your hip fracture. And so just fighting that urge to maybe not wear a mask to a store, or maybe, geez, you know, what's the big deal if I get together with, you know, this group of friends, or, you know, I really miss my family. I really want to get together with 20 people over Christmas time coming up. It's hard. We've all made sacrifices, but, you know, the good news is we've talked a bit about how things have changed since March. I do feel a lot of hope coming down the pipeline with vaccinations, with continued therapies. You know, really, if we could just kind of buckle up, hang on for the next few months, we will get through this. And so just continuing to get that support. I'll put off any meals or lunches that people want to buy us. Just wear a mask, wash your hands, and try to stay home and maintain that distancing.
Is there, I know the vaccines are not here yet, but we keep hearing lots of news about these. How are you preparing at Grand Itasca for when the vaccines are going to be available to folks?
That's a great and timely question. The next stop after this interview is vaccine meetings. So it's being coordinated through federal and state entities. And, you know, we will get our supply up here. It is not going to help vaccinate all healthcare workers, you know, in the first wave, which is sad. But we'll work through that. We'll tier our workers, you know, get our frontline staff vaccinated so that we can be protected and be present so that we can take care of those patients. And then it'll trickle down through various tiers, long-term care facilities, you know, folks with underlying medical problems, and so on and so forth. So we're working with our county, we're working with the Northeast region, and ultimately the state and the federal government to work the plan.
Dr. Dan Sular, Vice President of Medical Affairs and Family Medicine Physician, and Dr. Simon Lick is a hospitalist from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital. Thanks for the work you're doing, and thanks for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Heidi. Thank you. Appreciate it.
What is the story of the hour? One man's privilege and his power. How it turns sweet love oh so sour. Still I need to know. Oh.